Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 17. This week, I'm going to go over chapters 45 through 50 of The Eye of the World. I had a great time at Dragon Con. I met a lot of people. Thanks to everyone for attending, and thanks to Jennifer Liang for allowing us to do the live recording there. We're already planning next year's event. I do encourage everyone next year to go. We do talk about all sorts of crazy things. We talked about bosoms in relation to the power, men, and marrying. We did some trivia. It really is a great time. Also joining us this week is Ben.
I should have been there, but unfortunate circumstances prevented me. Anyway, I won't whine. Hey, everybody. I've got a couple crazy theories this week. One of them will be about the infamous Aes Sedai legend, Cad Swain Maledra. And also got sort of a fun, crazy theory about one of everybody's favorite animals. Also joining us this week is Carrie.
Hey, everybody. Our fan feedback of the week, we're going to have a couple of them, and one of them is about Shadar Hearn, and the other one is about Elida and what her role will be.
Our stand-in podcaster auditions are over. Thanks to everyone for sending in their great responses. With that being said, I do want to actually welcome the winner of our contest. Let's welcome Andrew to our podcasting team.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Andrew.
Well, I've been reading the series for quite a while. I've actually read completely through the 11 books in total twice, including, I think, actually New Spring as well. I had a friend who went overseas and couldn't actually take the time to read New Spring, so I actually recorded it for them to listen to as well, doing some character voicing here and there.
That's crazy dedication.
So you're doing your own version of the recording them yourself.
The recording kind of presented a few challenges here and there because I know everyone has their own unique ideas of what people sound like in their heads, and though we didn't actually get any Ogier really speaking in New Spring, I think they probably present the most challenge as far as doing any amount of voice acting concerning Eye of the World, or actually any of the books, because I am currently reading through the series with my girlfriend as it is.
Andrew, I've never heard of anyone's past. Andrew will be standing in case any of us are not able to make it. He'll be standing in for us. We look forward to hearing Andrew on some future podcasts. Welcome to Jason's Wheel of Time Journey. To remind everyone of where our characters are on my Wheel of Time journal, Loial is leading Rand, Matt, Perrin, Nynaeve, Egwene, Moiraine, and Lon through the ways. The Two Rivers people, as they're going through the ways, they do have some fun teasing each other about their adventures. Matt razzes Rand about Min. Egwene gets jealous, and then Perrin razzes Egwene about Arum, and then Matt goes back and gets back on Rand about Elsgrinwell also. In the ways, Lon sees signs of Trollocs using the ways, and he also senses someone following them. That actually turns out to be Podyn Fain. They start to hear Machen Shin, and they run for it. The leaf is missing when they get to the doorway, so Moiraine actually burns a hole through it with the power. On the other side, they arrive at Faldara. On their way to Faldara, they notice that all the people are missing from the farms. Also at Faldara, they meet Lord Angelmar of Faldara, and they also meet Ingtar. Ingtar mentions that they caught someone trying to sneak into the keep, who turns out to be Podyn Fain. Moiraine goes to question him. While Moiraine is questioning him, Angelmar tells the Emmonsfielder the story of Lon, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast. Moiraine and Lon return, and they learn that Podyn Fain was a dark friend for 40 years and that he was the one that brought the Trollocs to Emmonsfield. They proceed into the Blight after they spend the night there, and then they notice that the weather is changing. It's getting warmer as they head closer into the Blight. Moiraine makes an invisibility ward, which is something that isn't real common knowledge in the White Tower. in the Blight, as they're moving through, all of a sudden things start, they start to get attacked by like a lot of different things. The trees start to attack them, and then they hear a noise, which Lon mentions is a worm, so they start running from them. As they're running, they suddenly see that everything is green and peaceful, and the green man appears. The green man calls Loyal little brother. He calls Perrin wolf brother, and he calls Rand child of the dragon, meaning that he actually thinks that that Rand is an IL. Moiraine asks the green man to bring them to the Eye of the World, and that's where I'm going to stop there, and then we're actually going to finish up the last book in next week. What do you guys think about these chapters?
I love those chapters, and I was telling everybody earlier that I'm actually rereading The Eye of the World because it's so hard, because every time you go over all this stuff, I realize how much I don't remember. I mean, I remember when you say it, but I really need to reread them so I can talk about them more, because it's been so long. It's almost like reading a new book again. But I know that I can't wait to get to the last part, but this part was great. I love when they go up north and...
Yeah, this is the point for me wherever I got really addicted. Like, I could not stop. The beginning part, I was very interested. I thought it was cool. But this is the point where it just became, I don't care if it's 3:30 in the morning. I'm going to continue until I'm done. It just became, you know, that obsessive thing that I'm sure we've all had a Wheel of Time moment like that. But that was wherever I really just got grabbed by everything. The entire Ma Qin Xin has fascinated me. I've always kind of wanted to see more of it. I don't know, sort of a creepy thing. And, I don't know, it fascinated me. And all the way through with the being in Faldara and learning about Potun Fain and his history and how evil he was, and the action whenever Lon's fighting the worms and everything is just... for me, this is part of the stuff that just grabs me and just pulled me way into it. And those are some of my favorite parts whenever they're, you know, you just keep moving. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Now they got attacked by a worm. Oh, my gosh. There's this big green man. What's he doing? You know, all of this stuff. And so those are some of my favorite parts.
Yeah. And honestly, there's an amazing wealth of just imagery that you get throughout all of these chapters, in the ways you get this heavy, oppressive blackness that just you can almost imagine, especially if you're reading it at night, and you get this faint kind of howling, whispering, you know, gnashing sound for Ma Qin Xin. And at the same time, they all have this kind of nice little moment where, you know, Matt's going, "Hey, Rand," and he's kind of like, you know, nudging him in the ribs and whatnot, and Egwene gets all bent out of shape, and then Perrin, you know, kind of helps Rand out and says, "Well, you know, there was Aram," and Rand's like, "Well, who's Aram?" And he kind of gets that little extra kind of back and forth play off of them that kind of shows you that they're probably going to go in opposite directions, but at the same time, they're, you know, really succinct, and they're still really close to one another. And then you get everything at Faldara and the fight through the Blight with the rotting trees that are trying to grab at them, and you can just imagine this monstrous creature, the worm, and then out of nowhere everything just stops and becomes this peaceful little field, and, you know, there are butterflies and birds are chirping, and it's such a shift in location that it conjures up just great amounts of imagery. It's really kind of astounding in its way.
I think that the first book had the most parts that would be like the scariest. Between the beginning and the part where they're in the ways, they just always like creeped me out. It was so creepy, and even when they go back into the ways, it's not the same as the first time because it's so new and everything is just so creepy. And I just remember that the rest of the books, there's a lot of creepy parts, but it's mostly action, where this part just really creeped me out, like the noise and what they could hear and the whispers, and it's just very, very creepy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. This is something that I was curious about. I noticed... Jason, you even typed it up. It said, "Moiraine makes an invisibility ward, and that's something not common knowledge in the White Tower. Moraine seems to have a bunch of those little secret weaves that she she knows that not many other people know. She knows Balefire, and she knows about all kinds of stuff. I want to know where she learned all these. I was hoping to learn it in New Spring, but they never really told us where exactly she learned all these weaves. How did she learn it? It just, you know, some of the questions that I have that I still don't have the answer to. Where did she learn all those? I'd like to know.
Well, she said at one point that a lot of girls or young women, before they go to the tower, learn, and even though they don't know what they're doing, and they pick up on not the Balefire, but, you know, the invisibility maybe, or the eavesdropping, or some part of compulsion where they learn them to get what they want, or some way to manipulate people. But I can't see. That's why I'm rereading, because I need to reread the books, but that's why I'm starting.
Baron said it at the beginning of Path of Daggers. Yeah, it was either like a form of mild compulsion or eavesdropping. Those are the two major things that the young girls learn. But interesting questions nonetheless.
This is the point in our podcast where I'm going to ask anyone that hasn't read past the first book and past what we're talking about right now. This is the point, actually, where we're going to tell everyone that there is going to be spoilers upcoming.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week.
Hey, guys, this is Jason from Youngstown, Ohio, calling. I just had a question for you. What do you think Elida's role in the last battle is going to be? Do you think she'll even make it to the last battle, or will she end up stilled after Egwene and the rest of the Wonder Girls take over? Do you think she'll end up as so much cannon fodder, or will she actually make an attempt to redeem herself in the face of her forsaken masters? Also, I'd like to say that my favorite moment in the books has got to be where Rand and Robin are running through, jumping between Teleran Riod and the real world in the Castle of Vandor, after all of his friends get nuked by lightning and he Balefires Robin out of existence. Definitely what I think would be the most easily translatable scene into a movie. Just put my two cents in. Hopefully it'll engender some good conversation. Thank you very much, and here's looking forward to many more weeks of podcasts.
I would like to say thank you to Jason for sending in the voicemail. So, guys, what do you think?
I totally agree. I think that'd be a great thing to see in a movie. Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting part of the series, especially when everybody, not that it's, I don't like this in a sadistic way, but everybody gets Balefired, and then at the end to see them back again, just to see somebody act that out, not only the action in between, but the reaction character-wise, just to see that, I think could be great, too.
Yeah, I like that. The biggest thing I like about that is I would love to see them going back and forth between the real world and Teleran Riod. A creative movie producer could make that look really cool, I'm sure. I obviously would have no idea how to do it, but if you get that in the hands of one of those, you know, people, those visionary movie guys that are really talented at that, I would be ecstatic to see that scene unfold.
I really think that a really talented filmmaker could take and do a lot with Teleran Riod. I'd also really like to see that moment where someone swears that Osmodine is dead, and you just get that look on his face like he knows what happened to him and why he's alive again, and I just think that would be really neat to see.
Also, you guys, what do you think about the caller's question about what we think is going to be Elida's role in the next book, the final book?
Well, I actually don't think she's going to have that big of a role. I think just the way RJ has got his characters set up, most of the time, whenever Egwene wants something, she gets it, and so she wants to be Ommerlin. She's going to be Ommerlin, and Elida is going to fall, and she's not going to have that much to do in the last battle. She'll probably be rather annoyed that she's not Ommerlin, and be pretty much out of the picture. That's what I see for her. I don't see her being I don't see her being a major force in any of the last battle heroics. So I think she'll be out of the picture.
I think that her primary role in the final book is actually going to be to set up the whole thing. I think very early in the book that she's actually her downfall is going to lead into Egwene taking over the White Tower, and but what's going to happen to her after that, I don't know. I don't really feel that she's going to die. Maybe she's going to rot in jail, or maybe she is going to die, you know? I mean, who knows? I think it's going to serve the same purpose as what Saruman does at the beginning of the third Lord of the Rings film, if anyone saw those. It really just sets it up, and that's what I think is going to happen. She's just going to be a setup for the book.
I think she'll probably live. I don't see her being a major factor in the last battle, but I do see in that entire struggle that will eventually culminate in Egwene becoming Ommerlin, that she's going to have a major role because the Black Odge is still in the tower. She still has her searchers looking for them. And so that she's going to at least play a role for that much of it. But I don't see her being a big factor in the end.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
No, I think that all that, well, it's going to be kind of cleared up early. Egwene taking her place as Ommerlin, and possibly the Black Aja, the ones that they have found out so far, possibly being, like, everybody knowing at least that the Black Aja actually exists, and maybe publicly announcing it. I think that they're going to have to do that maybe before the last battle. I mean, it's going to be obvious. They're going to take sides before the last battle. Everybody's going to know who's where. But I don't think she's going to die either. I think, you know, I can kind of see, I think it would be kind of funny to see, you know how they always talk about doing penance off on a farm somewhere? I think that would just be funny to see her see light off, like, digging holes for fences, fence holes or something. I don't know. That would just be funny. That would be a good end for her.
I certainly agree. That would be an excellent way to end it. Here's the thing, though. We've still got Mesaana in the White Tower, so I wonder what exactly Elaida is going to be. You know, she set the entire searching of the Black Aja in motion, but she didn't even do it, like, that wasn't her intention originally. It was just to bring down Alviarin. It wasn't, you know, she wasn't really specifically going after the Black Aja. It just got interpreted that way because of her vagueness. So even whenever she does something good, it was only because she was trying to promote her own self. So of a totally incompetent Ommerlin, I think she is certainly the most incompetent that I've heard
of. Well, I think that she kind of knows that that she... Maybe she doesn't know that she's Black Aja, but that her everything that she does is like, why are you doing that, and why would you want that to happen? That would be chaos for the tower and everything else. She must know that she's serving other purposes besides the welfare of the White Tower itself. So I think she has an inkling that she may be Black Aja. So that's what I had thought. I thought maybe she had some, or maybe she was hoping for that they would find some evidence of that just to discredit her, or something to discredit her in some way.
Yeah. I think she's just arrogant enough to think that she's the only one who realizes that that's a bad idea. You know, she's coming with all these bad ideas, you know, Alviarin is, but Elaida is so arrogant she's thinking, oh, well, I'm smart enough to realize that that's a bad idea, and she's so stupid that she doesn't think that, but she's so arrogant that she doesn't realize there's any more complexity to that.
Welcome to Ben's Crazy Theory of the Week.
All right, it is crazy theory time, and I've got actually got a couple of crazy theories, one being a more fun one, and one, well, this one's pretty bizarre, but I might have to give you a little bit of background information so you can understand this one. The first one is about Cad Swain Melaidra. And in order to fully understand this crazy theory, you will have to have read The Strike at Shale Ghoul. It's a very, very, it's not even a short story. It's like 2 pages long, maybe. It just talks about the strike at Shale Ghul, talks about Luz Theron Telamon, and how he struck at made the Seven Seals, struck at the Dark One, and sealed up the Boar, and did all that. So if you haven't read that, then you will probably not get this crazy theory, and you might, if you haven't done it, this will be a little spoiler warning that you might not want to listen very long to this. All right, the crazy theory is that Cadswain Maladra is Latra, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but Latra Posei, and Latra Posei, who is in a stasis box or something, and does not have the ageless face that she has received all of these Terran Grial because they were part of hers at the Age of Legends. Actually, let me explain who Latra Posei is, if you are listening and you haven't read. Latra Posei was the lady who opposed Luz Theron Telamon, his idea to seal up the Boar with people channeling using the Seven Seals. Her idea was to create the two huge Sarang Rial and use those as a weapon against the Shadow. And Luz Theron eventually rebelled and did his own thing, but she was sort of his main, you know, main opponent in the Hall of the Servants back in the Age of Legends. So that's who Latra Posei, I'm so messing that name up, anyway, who Latra Posei is. This guy thinks that she was in a stasis box, and now she's come back, and she's doing all of her stuff. He does make an interesting point that there has never been a mention of Cadswain's ageless face. She's got a lot of Angrial, Salangrial, and, well, not Salangrial, but all of this type of cool power stuff, the little wells and the ability to detect male channeling. And he believes that she's not bound to the Three Oaths and that she is all of this stuff wrapped up into Latra Posei. I'm going to disagree. I think that the idea of her in a stasis box is a bit too far-fetched because we've seen her point of view. We've, you know, seen exactly what she thinks. She doesn't know Rand. She doesn't, you know, have this familiarity like the Forsaken have, commenting on how he's Luz Theron. It just seems a bit inconsistent. So,
Yeah, I also kind of disagree. If she were Laetra, or however you pronounce her name, I would see it being more that maybe she's her reborn. That she's... because everyone in the Wheel of Time is reborn at some point in time as someone else. So it'd be kind of one of those things that maybe she could be that, but I don't see her being cooped up in a stasis box for 3,000 years. It just seems a little silly.
I haven't read that story, but that's kind of... You know what? If it was her, would she not know Semirog's face? Like, you know how Rand knew Semirog, and he said that's Semirog, and everyone was like, how do you know that? She would recognize her because she would have been alive during that time. So she would know what all the Forsaken look like.
Ah.
Right? Yeah, woo.
More evidence. Down very good, Perry. Very, very good.
I don't know. I haven't read the story, so... But I... If...
It's a very good story. If you go to... we've referenced this site before, encyclopediawatt.com. Right underneath all of the... in some of the links, there is a little link to the Strike at Shale Ghul, just sort of right at the beginning there. And if you click on that, it'll take you to... It's actually on Tor's website. You can access it for free. And it's a very, very interesting read. It's vague, so it's kind of annoying in that respect. But anyway, certainly a good read if you're a big fan of the Wheel of Time. We're going to come up with a second crazy theory now, and actually Jason had this mentioned to him at Dragon Con. So Jason, would you like to tell this crazy theory?
Absolutely, absolutely. And thanks so much to Deb HJ who brought this to my attention at Dragon Con. Bella is Demandred.
Wow.
Also, how about Bella is the Dark One, or did Bella kill Asmodian?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, and yes. That's all I have to say. Yes. Anytime you can give a jackass more power in more magical powers, it's something that I give a firm thumbs up on.
You know, I would love to see have people write in some good theories on why they think that Bella is the Dark One or killed Asmodian, because I'm sure that there could be some great little theories brought up on, or evidence on how this could, why this could be, because that could get...
Yeah, I agree. and when Deb said it, I mean, we were after the podcast, after we actually recorded it, we talked about a lot of different things, you know, and that's actually where I met some of the people that listened to the podcast. Deb introduced herself, and she said, you know, maybe Bella is not just a horse, you know. So I agree. How about if some of our listeners send us some information? I mean, there's so much attention brought on Bella. What do you think Robert Jordan really means? Or what do you think his intentions are? Is Bella going to survive the last battle? How about we'll do that?
She's going to save the day.
Bella wields Kalindor.
We're going to, right now is where we're going to move on to our characters over the week. Actually, what we're doing is Rand's parents and Rand's family connections and maybe some family connections of others. We're not going to do Lon's family this week. We're actually going to save that for next week because we're going to talk a little bit about Rand and who his parents are. In this part, I hope that I'm going to, number one, pronounce everyone's name correctly, and then number two, I've wrote it down. We've talked about it as podcasters. I've did my research, and I hope that we get everything right. So here we go. Rand's parents are Janduin and Tigraine. Janduin is an IL. Tigraine was married to Tarangale. Tarangale is half-brother to Moiraine. If we talk about Tarangale and Tigraine for a few minutes, Tarangale and Tigraine married, and they had a son, Glad. Tigraine disappears. She leaves. She goes to the Isle Waste. Tarangale marries Morghais, and they have two children, Gowan and Elaine. I said just a second ago that Tigraine went to the Isle Waste. She did go there, and she went there, and she had Rand with Janduin. She dies while giving birth to Rand on the slopes of Dragonmount. Let me sum that up a little bit more. Gowan and Elaine are not actually related to Rand by blood. They are related to Rand by, I guess you would call them stepbrothers and stepsisters to Rand. Galad is, through blood, Galad is Rand's older half-brother, which is going to be very interesting in the last book to find out if either of them actually find out. I think that's really going to be very, very interesting. What do you guys think of that? What do you think, with that being set up and as confusing as Robert Jordan makes it, do you think it's going to have any specific effect on the last book, the last battle? What do you think is going to happen there?
Rand, I don't think, he's not even step-related, because that would mean that at all, but I guess maybe it would be so far back that, yes, you could see it in the family tree from way back, but, you know, it wouldn't make a difference, mm-hmm. like, with him and Elaine being together or anything.
Yeah, it's kind of... They're kind of like stepbrother and sister, and let me clarify, kind of like after the fact is kind of like when, I mean, you're right, it's not exactly stepbrother and sister, it's a little bit even more removed than that.
But I can see it making a difference in the way that he is related to Glad. Glad is his older half-brother. That can play a big role, and now everything is completely changed because he knows Rand did not kill his mother. So at first I thought that it was going to come out that he's his brother and he still thought that he killed her, but now it's interesting. What do you guys think is going to happen? Like, everybody's going to have to meet up at some point. Like, we have to have this conclusion of Morghais and Glad meeting and Glad and Rand finding out that they're, or knowing that they're half-brothers.
Well, this is my opinion. I think that in the sweep of events, that things that are going on, Rand is a busy guy, and Galad very well could be... I'm not sure, did it ever say if he was Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light? He killed the Lord Captain, Valda, but did he become the new Lord Captain Commander? I don't know. But
Like, he rebelled and took his little company.
Yeah, he's kind of got like...
And took off. And I don't think the rest of the White Cloaks are going to go for that. Yeah. Possibly, but I think he's almost like a different division in his own now, because he is going to help the supposed witches. In the end, you know, they're going to have... If they're good, they're going to have to fight on the side of good. And that means that the channelers and everybody is going to have to come together. I don't know if the other White Cloaks will be involved in that. I don't know. Possibly.
Well, this is, you know, in the press of events, either way, Galad has got a lot of responsibility. And Rand, we know how much is on his plate. He's got a lot of plans. He's got a lot of things. I don't think, this might sound weird, but I don't think they're going to have time to be all that offended. I think they'll realize it, they'll hear it, and it'll be, you know, sort of like, their reactions will be sort of like how Elaine and Min and Avienda feel about sharing each other with Rand. They don't like it. They don't like the idea that they're sharing Rand, but there's not that much they're going to do about it that's going to really, you know... They can't change everything. That's what they're going to do, so it's just going to be sort of a passive displeasure.
You think Galad would be offended that Rand is his half-brother?
Well, not so much offended, but displeased by the notion, hey, I'm related to the Dragon Reborn, he's my brother. That's sort of an uncomfortable situation, giving especially what he thinks about, you know, channelers and what he thinks about male channelers and what he thinks about how Rand killed his mom. So it's not exactly something that he's really excited about. But I don't think he's going to have enough time to be pushing any rebellions against Rand.
Yeah, and well, also, Galad being Rand's older half-brother, him being related by blood, that might also come into play there at the last battle. We keep talking about how his blood on the rocks, and it could very well be because Galad does what is right all the time, even at his own cost. And it's kind of that idea that maybe Galad will see that one moment where it's just necessary to sacrifice himself in order for the greater good to be accomplished.
Sheathing the sword, isn't that what Lon teaches Rand? He may have to...
Yes, it is.
Yes, because it could be Galad's blood, it could be some of the Aiel's blood, it could be Elaine's and Rand's children's blood. I mean, there are so many... With all this family connections, it could almost be anybody when it mentions his blood, so...
All of the above.
Speaking of family connections, I think that hopefully that everyone's a little bit more clear now on who Rand's parents are and how he's related to Gowen, Elaine, and Galad. That was our goal for this week. Next week, actually, our goal is to go through a little bit about Lon and Luke and that whole side of the family connections. I think that's the other real confusing part that maybe not a lot of people understand. Maybe even more than Rand. At least it's tough for me to understand just as much as it is Rand also.
Also, if anybody would like to call in and send us a voicemail, we'd love to hear from you, and maybe we might get the opportunity to play it on the show. Our number is 1-888-333-7690. That's also posted at the very top of our page at dragonmount.com/podcast.
And we've also got a forum at the Dragonmount forums. It's www.dragonmount.com. You go to the forums page, click on the Fourth Age, and you can talk about the podcast, what you like, what you don't like, talk about your theories, your ideas, comments on what we've said. Just go on there and do your forum thing. So that's dragonmount.com in the forums, the Fourth Age.
And as of course, you can always send us email as well at podcast@dragonmount.com. Ask us questions, leave us some feedback, or hey, just say hello. We love to hear from people all the time.
Thanks everyone for listening this week. I'll extend it again, and thanks very much, Andrew. Thanks so much for coming along. We'll see everyone next week.
Take care.
Walk in the light.
Have a good one, you guys.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@dragonmount.com. The music for our podcast is brought to you by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.